Did you know Microsoft has officially ended support for Windows 10? Upgrade to Windows 11 with an LG Gram laptop. Voted PC Mag's Reader's Choice Top Laptop Brand for 2025. Thin and ultra lightweight, the LG Gram keeps you productive anywhere. And Windows 11 gives you access to free security updates and ongoing feature upgrades. Visit lgusa.com/iHeart for great seasonal savings on LG Gram laptops with Windows 11. PC Mag Reader's Choice used with permission. All rights reserved.
Welcome to the Boneyard with Steve Robertson. As always, I am your good friend and host, Steve Robertson, here on the Monday morning edition of the Yard. Yeah, we're getting an early start today. I got to interview Coach Casey Dunn from UAB this afternoon. We'll have that up for VIP members at jeanspage.com this afternoon. But yeah, good weekend. Feels good to win. Really wanted the sweep. We get the series win. A 3-1 week for the Bulldogs. We'll break down the weekend. We'll look ahead to the week. We'll talk about the weekend that was in the Southeastern Conference. Also, some big news on the basketball front as Mississippi State men's basketball picks up a transfer in the form of Jabari McGee, a native of Macomb, Mississippi. Moved to Alabama, a product of Winfield High School, went to Garden City Community College, had a pretty good start to the college career, and then left Garden City and went to South Plains Community College, where he was a 18.7 points per game scorer, and then lands at UAB, and so it'll be his fourth school in 4 years. It's kind of part of the deal. That's the world in which we live in, kids. I don't think everybody fully appreciates that. A lot of people out there always think there's got to be a bigger story. The story is that the portal is going to change everything, and it has. Many of you don't like it. It's part of the deal, you know. It's the world in which we live. But McGee last year played in 37 games and started all 37 games. Averaged 25.6 minutes per game. Averaging 11.1 points per game. Pulling down a couple of rebounds. Not a guy that got into a lot of foul trouble, but distributed pretty well. 104 assists against 67 turnovers. Got to get that down a little bit. 39 steals for him on the season. Also had a handful of blocks. But, you know, he's a piece. You know, simple as that. He is going to be a piece. What you may like about this is he's a guy that can run the point. Some of the things you may not like about it, shoots about 69% from the free throw line. You'd like to have a guy that can handle the basketball late in ball games. He'd be able to go convert at the line. But, you know, not a huge rebounder. Pulled down 101 boards on the year, again, in 37 games. But, you know, again, a guy that is kind of well-traveled, and now he's going to be a Bulldog. And a lot of outgoing traffic, as you guys are well aware. That's what happens first, so everybody feels like the sky is falling. We're seeing some of that on the women's basketball side, too. And let me caution you about something, too. There are sometimes that players leave, and just because you know their names and you've grown accustomed to watching them doesn't mean they're great players. That's in every sport. And people always think, well, something must be wrong. No, not always. You know, Medina Okot going in the portal is very much a concern. And I understand a lot of that's got to do with an agent that's involved in her life and her recruitment that helped her get to the United States. I'm told that she's happy here. So maybe we can keep her here. But my honest opinion is I think there are some people in her ear that are looking for the rev share NIL deal. I don't think anybody should have negative opinions of Medina Okot based on the things we're hearing. You know, that's just, you know, I don't think this is a scenario where you've got bad locker room culture or anything like that, or Sam Purcell's mistreating players. I don't believe any of that. Not for 1 second. But that becomes the conversation among the concerned, right? When you love Mississippi State sports and players leave, you know, we think, well, something must be wrong. And then you don't look around the fact and understand that you're living in the big maroon bubble. So you're only kind of acutely aware of what's happening in Starkville. And you don't realize it's happening to everybody. It's true. Women's basketball season now in the books as UConn wins a national championship over Dawn Staley in South Carolina. Tonight, the men will crown a national champion. as Florida and Houston will play for a national title. And I go back, too, to that coaching search, and we hired Chris Jans. We talked about it before. The three finalists were Todd Golden, Matt McMahon, Chris Jans. And I would say right now, based on, you know, the returns of the last 3 years, State got the, you know, maybe the second best of the three. And, of course, there were some people out there with their sources telling you that Matt McMahon was the leading candidate, even though we weren't even talking to him anymore. But I digress. But that's where we stand right now. So I want to kind of get that out of the way before we get going, because there is some good news happening. And I've got a tremendous amount of respect for the job that Chris Jans has done here. I have no doubt that he'll put together a competitive roster. I'm really not worried about Josh Hubbard. I know some people, you know, they see the news and they react negatively because they love Mississippi State. And I commend people that it comes from a good place. But before you hit send on a tweet, and yes, sir, I'm talking to you, you shouldn't go out there and attack these people not knowing what the landscape really looks like. And again, we had some players from the football side that would have loved to have stayed here, but were never going to contribute. And we did the right thing for everybody involved by encouraging them to transfer because of the fact they weren't going to play here. They eat up a scholarship spot, and it prevents us from signing somebody else that could transfer and compete here and contribute. But the more merciful thing is honesty. I mean, that's all of us, any of us really want in life, right? I mean, honesty, love, respect, dignity, equal treatment under the law. You know, all those things are, you know, tenets of an existence that kind of gives us a chance to do something fair in life. I never want to be protected from the truth. Just tell me the truth. Am I going to play here or not? If not, I'll leave. Am I going to be loved and respected in this relationship? If not, I'll leave, right? I mean, those are how things work. And so you want the truth. And so sometimes we get the truth and we don't have all the truth. We don't have all the facts. And when there is a vacuum out there, people try to fill that vacuum with rumors and innuendo of their own. And we're seeing some of that, too, in relation to some baseball stuff. But I'm not going to get into all that stuff. There's a lot of people out there that do not have sources. They have very vivid imaginations, and they attribute their thoughts and their beliefs to, quote, sources, to give validity to their opinions. And I encourage you not to listen to those folks. That's not as germane to Mississippi State sports media message boards and social media. That's just kind of the world in which we live right now. There are a lot of people out there that don't have enough confidence and self-esteem that they want to suggest they have the collective opinion and perhaps have information that you don't to make them seem more credible. And they're completely false and should not be trusted. All right, let's thank our friends at Bulldog Burger Company, longtime sponsors of this show. I love Bulldog Burger Company. I have for a long time. I will eat Bulldog Burger Company at least once this week. At least that's the plan. You never know how life's going to go. But I'm excited about it, and I always am. Because I know what to expect from Bulldog Burger Company. I know that I'm going to get a great meal at a great price, get great service, whether I get it to go or whether I eat there. When I put my feet under their table, I don't have to worry about anything else. My drink is always filled. The food is always delivered fresh and hot and on time. And I love it. And if I get it to go, it's always well packaged. I can bring it home. I don't have to worry about, you know, having to basically have a stew of what they have put together. It is very well packaged. They do a great job with that. So if you're looking for lunch or dinner to go today, consider Bulldog Burger Company. Three great locations to serve you: University Drive in Stark Vegas, Gloucester Street there in Tupelo, Lake Harbor Drive in the Ridge and Flowood area. Have the spring rolls as your appetizer that make you and everybody around you better looking. Get that chocolate shake to go. You can ride that ride home with a smile. When you ask the kids where they want to eat, you know as well as I do, more times than not, it's going to be Bulldog Burger Company. Yeah, it is. So give the kids what they want, and while you're there, get something great for yourself. Maybe you don't feel like a hamburger today. Get the BLT salad. It's my favorite. I like it grilled. You may prefer it fried. I'm not judging. Just, you know, enjoy life a little bit. Bulldog Burger Company makes life more enjoyable for me. I trust that's the same for you. Bulldog Burger Company, the place where people go to meet. M-E-A-T. Okay. Mississippi State takes 2 of 3 from South Carolina. And again, we really wanted 3, but we're not going to sit here and cry about it. But, yeah, we jump out to the early lead in game one, and it felt like, you know what, hey, we're in a good spot here. They're throwing their best guy today, Jake McCoy, and we get to him, maybe get into that bullpen. And I remember thinking, telling, you know, Mike Nemeth, I don't want to have the blowout on Friday. I want to have the win on Friday, but I want to get into that bullpen a little bit because you're managing the entire weekend based on what you do on Friday. You don't want to go all in on Friday and burn all the arms, lose a ball game, and then have to throw down the bullpen guys on Saturday and Sunday trying to salvage something. But I thought we managed it pretty well, but we didn't swing it well on Friday. And very disappointing. And I'll be honest with you, of all the losses that we've had this year, this is probably the one that bothered me the most. Because I felt like, hey, they don't have a lot of good starting pitching. They're throwing a Sunday guy on Friday, and we're throwing our best guy. We ought to be in great shape here. This is the game I expected to win, and then maybe we'll see what happens on Saturday, and Sunday turns into a church league softball game. You never know. But you can't sweep all three if you don't win the first one. So let's kind of take a look back here, and I'll provide some insight as we go. But again, I didn't think Pico had his best stuff. And he was absolutely outstanding at LSU. I thought he was good at Oklahoma. I didn't think he was great, but he was so incredibly competitive and he grinded his way through. I thought on Friday he didn't look like the guy we saw last week against LSU, and that's just how it's going to be. I mean, guys, Greg Maddux locked 275 games in his career. People don't think about that kind of stuff. I mean, there are days you go out there and you just don't have it or you don't get the run support here. But, you know, it's interesting how South Carolina elected to kind of structure their lineup. You know, Nathan Hall's a guy we talked about in our preview that had been hitting leadoff. They move him to the three-hole to try to give him some run-driving opportunities here. And then here's what happens. They basically are in the same scenario with him in the three holes they were as the leadoff hitter, because Pico gets the first two outs and then Hall gets a little single by the pitcher. So now he's on base with two outs. So instead of him being a table setter, you know, I get on base, there's nobody on base, I can't drive any runs. We pitch around Petrie here. Now it's first and second. A chance, one pitch away to get out of this thing with no damage, and then carry on, singles back up the middle. The run scores there. And we eventually get Scobie, who I thought was a great defender at third base for South Carolina all weekend. Made some big plays on Friday. But it's a 1-0 ball game, and you think one's not going to be enough to win this game. And State comes back in the bottom of the first, and it's like, hey, here we are. We're not going away either. One run's not going to be enough to win this game, Steve, because we're going to score three right here. We get Garrick Fry to lead off in this ball game. We tried that Friday and Saturday, and really not much happened. You know, he played left field, I guess Tuesday, Friday, and Saturday, but offensively we just did not have a good week. Reese comes up and singles to right, takes second on a wild pitch, goes to third. They go out there to talk to McCoy, and then he walks Sullivan, and then Hunter Hines comes through, extending his hitting streak at the time to 10 games, doubles to left field, both runs score. Takes that ball the other way there, and they kind of misplay it, but they rule it a double. It could have been a hit and an error, but either way, both runs score. And then with two down, Bryce Chance comes up with a two-out single through the left side to chase in Hunter Hines from third. It makes it a 3-1 ball game, and then Heifel pops up, and it's over. But we think, hey, okay, we've got this guy on the ropes early. We got to be in good shape. Well, Pico gives up a single to center on an 0-2 pitch. And then we get the double play. You roll it up there. Really nice double play. 1-4-3 is the official scoring there. And then we walk the 9-hole hitter. And those are the things that drive me nuts. And Kazmar had a good weekend, especially on Saturday. But we get out of the jam, and it's 3-1, though. And time for us to get back on the sticks. And then McCoy plunks Sanders. Gat Sanders gets on base. And it's kind of an excuse me swing here, and I hate it for Dylan Cup, who's been playing really well. It's just a little tap back to the mound, and they turn a double play. And we've got this guy on the ropes, and this, again, is not a criticism of Dylan Cup, but you start thinking about this, man, what could this inning have been here? Because after the double play, he walks Fry and Reese back to back. We had him on the ropes, and he kind of got, again, that excuse me swing. How many times in life, in baseball, do you issue three passes in an inning and then you don't give up a run? It just doesn't happen very often, right? A hit by pitch and two walks and we don't score here. And Noah Sullivan has been our dude, leading on base percentage guy, and he flies out to center field here. So a missed opportunity for your Bulldogs. Pico comes back, has a better situation here in the third. It goes 1-2-3, strikes out the side, but these at-bats were pretty lengthy, so you start getting a little concerned about the pitch count. But nevertheless, it's three outs and no runs, and you know, we're back in the dugout ready to swing again. And not much happens for us. We get the leadoff walk to Hunter Hines. Downs grounds into a double play, and he absolutely murders his baseball. We talked about Scobie and what a good job he did playing third. Here, this is a prime example here. This thing is probably 100-plus off the bat. He fills it on the short hop and turns two, and the ball certainly was hit hard enough to turn two. Just kind of a tough luck play there by Downs, and then Chance flies out to center. But, you know, defense wins ball games, right? Defense wins games. Top of four, and this is when things got a little bit dicey. Carry on doubles down the third baseline. We were kind of shaded over a little bit, and he pulls that ball inside the bag. We get the ground out to third, and Ace looks the runner back. We take the out at first, and you think, okay, we're going to be okay. And then on a 2-1 count, Bo Hollins, a guy that certainly has some pop, the first baseman, home runs to center field to tie the ball game. Braylon walks, Kazmar flies out, and we get Jones to strike out swinging to end it there. But now the game is tied, and there was a little bit uneasiness at Duty Noble Field at this point because, again, it didn't appear Pico had his best stuff, and we were kind of leaving some ducks on the pond. Bottom of four, we get a one-out single, but not much going there. Sanders comes through there with a base knock there with one down, and we can't get him around. Top of five, game pretty much stays where it is. They get a two-out single from Petrie, one of his few hits. Hall and Petrie go combined 3 of 20 for the weekend. And I don't know that Hall ever hit a ball out of the infield. At least not safely. Carrion hits this ball on an absolute rope, but it's right at the right fielder. So we get out of that without much anxiety, I guess you could say. Bottom of five here. Well, we go 1-2-3, and you start thinking, okay, we're going to be good. We bring in Ben Davis here in the sixth, and this is where we kind of have a little bit of a come apart, and I don't blame Ben Davis for this. He gets the ground out to second, and then it's a single through the right side there. And I won't call it a C&I single because he was struck well, but, just a ground ball to the right spot. And then we compound it by walking Braylon, the catcher, and then it's a wild pitch, allows both guys to move up in a scoring position. And how many times do you see it, right? You bring in the new pitcher, and all of a sudden, there's like a C&I single or a ball drops, and next thing you know, you compound your misery with the walk there and then the wild pitch. So we've taken a pretty basic scenario here in baseball and made it a real threat. This is a self-inflicted wound here. After the mound visit, we get Kazmar, the nine-hole hitter, to strike out looking. And you're thinking, I'm thinking, everybody's thinking, okay, now it's a chance for us to get off field. Chance for us to at least get out of here with minimal damage. I mean, a non-productive out right here. So we get the ground ball to short, and Dylan Cup is kind of in between. Not a great runner heading down to first, but he decides that we're going to go to third with it, and he fumbles it, the run scores. And then the next play goes to him on an 0-2 pitch, and it's a throwing error. So back-to-back errors from Cup make it a 5-3 ball game. I'm not beating up on Dylan Cup. He is a legit defender. He has had some time this year where he is maybe pressed a little bit, but this guy is going to be a guy that's going to be a pro ball player for a long time. But a tough inning here for him. And, again, Ben Davis, you're getting the ground balls and then not getting the outs. And that's the difference in this ball game. It's 5-3, and you think there's plenty of ball game left. And it looks like here in the bottom of six, we're going to make some things happen. Bryce Chance with a one-out double to right field. Bryce had a good weekend, dude. Didn't have a great weekend at LSU. Really bounced back this weekend, I thought, and hit the ball well. Bryce Highfield walks. So now all of a sudden, we got tying runners on base with less than two outs. We decide to pinch hit Sawyer Reeves for Getz Enders. They go out and talk about it, and Reeves has now walked. Bases are loaded. Less than two outs. A base hit's going to tie the ball game. And then Cup strikes out swinging. And then Fry lines out to center field. And so, again, leaving ducks on the pond gets you beat. You don't play clean defense. You give teams extra outs, and you don't make them pay when they're struggling. And again, this is the second inning where we had a pitcher that was struggling, McCoy, and we didn't make him pay. You know, of course, in the first inning we did, but a couple other innings we don't. And it proves to be very, very costly for Mississippi State later. Every play, every pitch matters. We talk about it all the time. All right, top of seventh, Lucas Bugner takes over defensively for Gat Sanders at second. We pitch around Petrie. We get a ground out. We force the runner at second but can't turn two. But then back-to-back Ks, very efficient in our work there. We go to bottom of seven, and we go 1-2-3. They bring in Sweeney. And, guys, it's just remarkable how we just really struggled with the South Carolina bullpen on Friday. It truly is. You know, you get into the bullpen, you start thinking, okay, you got a chance. But they threw some of their better bullpen arms on Friday to ensure they got the win. Top of eight, they get a one-out single, but then we pitch around that. Bottom of eight, we go 1-2-3. Top of nine, they put the game away here. And they did what good teams do, though they're not a good team. But, you know, again, some of this is our own issue. Hall strikes out swinging. Petrie is then walked. And here's one of the things I want to talk about. Petrie goes into second, standing up. So basically what you're supposed to do is either slide or give yourself up here. But he goes in standing up. The problem that is you have to at least attempt to make a throw here. And part of the issue is Buckner is positioned on the backside of the bag to the third base side. So there was like there's not only no attempt to throw, he's not in a position to throw. Like his fielding position does not suggest that we're going to try to turn two. We challenge the call. They don't use the force play slide rule here. And I think as much as I didn't like it, it's the right call. It is. But, you know, that's baseball. And again, Buckner's just trying to make a play, right? It's like, yeah, I gotta take the sure out here. We have to get a out. There are three outs required to get out of an inning. And this is out number two. So, again, now you're a pitch away from getting out of this thing. And Carrion gets the fielder's choice to third. On this play, you know, I just don't know if there was a chance for us to turn two there, even because of how that ball was hit. It'd be one thing if it's a one-hopper right at Reese, but it wasn't. Or one to his left. And then Scobie didn't do a lot offensively, but he does here. He singles down the line. And, now bases are loaded, and they cash in. Bo Hollins singles back up the middle on an 0-2 count. And two runs score to make it 7-3. And then bottom of nine, State basically goes quietly. And so we win the game. And it was a tough ride home. And I know many of you felt the same way. There were some boos at Duty Noble, which I'm never a fan of. Because nobody knows your intentions, right? It's one thing when you get out there and you tweet at people, which I'm not a fan of that either. But at least we know who you're talking to. Those are the things that are interesting. But over the course of the last 3 2/3 of an inning, against Caleb Jones and Brendan Sweeney, Mississippi State did not have a base runner. And you're in a two-run ball game, you got to get guys on base. We didn't. So tip of the cap to them, but also, too, kind of a thumbs down for us. It's not just me tipping the cap to them saying they pitched it well. We got to have more competitive at-bats. Again, Pico, not his best stuff. Goes five innings, allows six hits, three earned runs, six Ks, three walks, and just gets the no decision there. Ben Davis gets a loss. Ben goes four innings pitch, four hits, four runs, only two of them earned. But, he'll put a little defense behind him. And listen, I'm not going to in any way talk about the first error to Cup is a tough play. You get caught a little bit in between. But you're probably going to get the runner at third. The run's going to score. But that kind of changes the complexity of the ballgame. It truly does. But, looking at who did well, and that's not a long list in this game. Ace Reese goes 1-for-3. Bryce Chance 2-for-4. Probably your hitting hero. Bulldogs only had five hits in the ballgame. And again, early on, you scored three runs in the first inning. You think we're fixing to rake this guy, and we don't. So State drops game one, and now we look ahead to some better news as we get into game two. You ever Googled yourself? You may be alarmed to know exactly how much of your private information and data is out there for anybody to access. Whether it be your phone number, your home address, or details about your family. It could be your kids' names, their ages. Whether you agree to this disclosure or not. And that's because data brokers are collecting and selling your information to marketers, scammers, and basically anyone willing to pay. It's the reason robocallers know your name, and while ads seem to follow you on every digital platform out there. Well, Aura fights back for you. They remove your personal data from broker sites and keep it off. Aura also alerts you fast if your information shows up in a data breach or on the dark web. But Aura is more than just data broker removal. It's a full digital security suite that protects every part of your life online. Aura gives you a VPN to stay private, antivirus to block threats, a password manager to keep all your logins safe. They even give you spam call protection to cut off those stupid scammers. Aura also scans the dark web regularly for your most sensitive information, like your social security number, bank logins, passwords, and they will notify you instantly if you are somehow exposed. If your identity is ever stolen, you're backed up to $5 million in insurance and 24/7 U.S.-based fraud support to help you recover everything quickly. Other services charge about the same, but they only cover one or two areas. With Aura, you get it all. Data broker removal, credit and identity monitoring, device protection, and fraud support, all with one simple app. Aura removes what is already exposed, protects what isn't, and puts you back in control. Right now, you can try Aura free for 14 days when you visit aura.com/remove. That gives them plenty of time to go ahead and start protecting your data. They can remove your personal information from data broker sites. Sign up today at aura.com/remove and get the peace of mind that your privacy, identity, and finances are all safeguarded. That's Aura, aura.com/remove. Certain terms and conditions apply. Be sure and check it out today at aura.com.
Did you know Microsoft has officially ended support for Windows 10? Upgrade to Windows 11 with an LG Graham laptop. Voted PC Mag's Reader's Choice Top Laptop Brand for 2025. Thin and ultra lightweight, the LG Graham keeps you productive anywhere. And Windows 11 gives you access to free security updates and ongoing feature upgrades. Visit LGUSA.com/iHeart for great seasonal savings on LG Graham laptops with Windows 11. PC Mag Reader's Choice used with permission. All rights reserved.
All right, game two. Obviously a must-win game for Mississippi State. A must-win game for Mississippi State baseball. The fan base, coaching staff, everybody involved. Everybody knew we needed to win this ball game, and thankfully we do. And it's so interesting. We had to get five outs. Yeah, it's crazy. So I thought the review at first on this, Ethan Hall has the little dribbler to third, and they call him out, and Hines is having to stretch here for the ball, and even with that Hawkeye technology, I don't think you can tell if he's on or off the bag. And so I thought the call should have stood. I didn't think there was evidence to overturn it. They do overturn it. And then he's still second base, and Joe Powell throws him out. They review it, and he was clearly safe. I think initially they thought that Cup had tagged him on the shoulder. Cup tags him on the leg, but the hand is already in there. And so we've already gotten Nathan Hall out twice, according to the officiating crew, but both have been overturned on review. And again, I think the call at first should have stood. The call at second was correct. Nathan Hall's a dude. He is, no doubt about it. And you start thinking here, it's just not our day, guys. But we didn't buy into that. Thank goodness. They get the sack bunt down and moving to third. And so now you've got the go-ahead run on base with less than two outs. And Petrie coming up. We pitch around him. And we did a lot of times. He walked five times on a weekend. And every one of those was just kind of unintentional, intentional walks. And then Hollis strikes out swinging. You know, really, really, really good job here by Evan Sierry. And then they try to run the U-trip play that LSU does, but somebody misses the sign here. Petrie is out. Hall never makes a break to the plate. And I suspect that's probably the play that's called. It's, hey, Ethan, go out there and just get in a rundown, and we'll get Hall home. But somebody missed the sign. So we get a caught stealing, and we get out of it. Bad base running right there. So good job by the Bulldogs to avoid that. Again, we basically had to get five outs in the inning. when it's all said and done, and you don't give up a run. I mean, again, it's so easy when you start thinking things aren't going to go our way. But again, you keep playing ball. Fry opens up with a strikeout on three pitches, and then Reese singles to left, and then Noah Sullivan homers to left field. That guy's really been the player we hoped he would be. It's a two-run ball game. Hines hits one. It just kind of throws the bat out there. Lines out pretty hard to right field there, and then Chance gets out. But again, 2-0 ball game headed to the second. And again, I like this Sierra combo. I think you could work in with Ben Davis. You know, we'll see how things go. You know, and it's like you're working with Pico. You get the lefty and come back with the power righty with the power sinker. Maybe that works better for us. I don't know. But top of second, we get out of it. They get a two-out double, and then we get the ground ball to second. And pretty much everything hit to get Sanders. I feel like it's going to be an out, you know. Our bottom of second, we get going here, get a chance for us to get some things going. Steven singles down the third base line, and then they hit Gad Sanders. And so now you got runners at first and second. And I will be honest with you. I would not have bunted here. And I'm a guy that loves the short game. But this early in the ball game, when you've got a pitcher that is struggling a little bit, I think you go out there because you made some really hard contact in the first. You know, I mean, outside of the Fry at bat, you hit every ball pretty hard. And this is a guy that's more of a soft toss and lefty. And, you know, Stevens has already beaten the shift, and he's hit Gad Sanders. I just don't know that I would have given up an out right here. I know what the percentages say and that sort of stuff. But when I get in a 2-0 count here, and they're expecting me to bunt, and they're bringing everybody up, I don't know that I don't swing away here. And again, I know I'm Monday morning quarterback in this, but I don't know that I would have bunt. We did bunt here. The runners get around a second and third, and then we don't do anything with it. Cup flies out to left, and it's not deep enough to score the run. It's basically a pop fly that just kind of drifts out to the outfield grass, and then Fry grounds out the short. And I think Fry's pressing a little bit right now, too. He finally gets a chance to get back in the lineup and just hadn't done much with it over the course of the last week. And so, again, here we go. We get the first two guys on, and then we don't do anything with it. And fortunately didn't come back to bite us. The nine-hole hitter, Kazmar, opens up with a solo home run to make it a 2-1 ball game in the top of third. We get a couple outs there, pitch around Petrie, and get Howens to ground out to short. And a really good game plan against Ethan Petrie. Ace Reese gets the run right back on the very first pitch, the bottom of third. He hits a home run on Oppo Taco. Sullivan flies out. Hines strikes out. And then here, a two-out rally for the Bulldogs. We've been hard on State at times for poor situational hitting. But in this inning, we did pretty well. And again, thought we were very patient at the plate. We were aggressive on certain pitches and certain scenarios, but we were content to make them pitch to us. Chance singles through the left side. I thought he hit that ball really hard. 2-0 pitch there. Really pulled that ball hard in the left. And then he walks Stevens and walks Gat. So bases are loaded. Two outs, bases are loaded. And then Joe Powell, very first pitch, pulls it hard down the left field line. Two-run score, makes it 5-1. Then there's the wild pitch, and then Sanders scores. And this is what happens. When you have pitchers on the rope, you got to finish them. You have to finish them. And again, I go back to that Friday night game. We had every opportunity to knock McCoy out of the game earlier and couldn't get the big hit. Well, here we do. And what do you know? Evans is out of the game. They bring in Parks and to kind of mitigate the damage. But, guys, it's 6-1 here in the top of four. Now, we've had leads in the middle innings before and blown them, but it just kind of felt like, you know, hey, this wasn't LSU. We weren't on the road. I thought our crowd did a good job, too. And we go out there, and it's a 1-2-3 inning there in the fourth. And right now everybody's thinking, you know what, man, Sierra's doing great. Let's just ride with him. I just think that he is a one-time do-the-order guy. And situationally, in this situation with a five-run lead, maybe you stretch him a little bit. And we did. The bottom of four state goes 1-2-3. And then in the fifth, and again, this is what happens. And this is not being critical of Sierra. I just don't think the fastball is dynamic enough for him to really get through the order. Maybe two times is probably the most. Anything beyond that, I think you're in trouble. But he gives up the single to Coffer, the backup catcher. after a pretty lengthy at-bat, he gets ahead 0-2, and it's a 1-2 count, and the next thing you know, the guy fouls off back-to-back 2-2 pitches and gets the single to center and just kind of dumps it out there. It wasn't like he just, you know, raked it. But then Kazmar, on a 2-0 count, gets the ball to his liking, and it's a home run. His second of the day makes it a 6-3 ball game. And again, this is kind of what we're talking about, right? I think Evan Sierra is two times through the order guy. I don't think he can get you through the order three times. Well, after the home run, we get Hall to strike out swinging, and then Jackson homers down the left field line, makes it a 6-4 ball game. So all of a sudden, you know, the 5-run lead is down to a 2-run lead after a couple of home runs. And you're kind of flashing back to last week against LSU. You know, we pulled Sierra and people are like, hey, you should have let him go a little bit longer. Guys, he was giving up some hard contact in his final inning of work, and that's what you look for. Well, then here's what happens here. You know, you've expanded the lead a little bit, and you're like, well, let's ride with him a little bit more. Maybe he can get us another inning, and here we go, right? Here we go. I mean, I just think we're learning. This is his limitation. Hungate comes in, and we get a ground out to third, ground out to the pitcher, and we're back on the sticks. We open up here. Hines doubles to right center and extends the hitting streak to 11 games. We sack Bunny McCross, and again, good situational hitting here. Nolan Stevens singles that ball back up the middle, run score. So it works the way we want right here, right? We played a small game, and Hines is able to score. So we get one of those runs back. Stevens is caught stealing here, and then Sanders grounds out. But the lead is back to 3 runs. And I thought Hungate was great the rest of the way. Really was. Gets a line out to first here. He walks Ueda. And then he gets back-to-back strikeouts to get us back in the dugout. They bring in Marlott in place of Parks, and we expand the lead. Powell grounds out to third, and then Dylan Cup with his first collegiate home run. And he was hitting some bombs in BP at Memphis, and I remember telling my wife, Dylan's swinging the ball at the bat really well right now. I think it's just a matter of time before he runs into one, and then he does, right? Great, great moment for him and his family. Makes it 8-4. So now all of a sudden you start feeling a little bit better. We bring in Reed Stallman to pinch hit for Garrick Fry. Playing matchups here. And then Stallman doubles to left to center field. And I don't know if Cheese wasn't waving him around the whole time. I couldn't watch them both. But Stallman hesitates a little bit coming around second and is thrown out at third. Now, discretion's a better part of valor. I really don't know that I would have sent him, but I also understand, again, when you have people on the ropes, you want to do damage. But here we go. Here we go. Run scores, and then Stallman's out, so bases are empty. It's an 8-4 ball game, and then Reese homers to center field, and that ball was absolutely crushed. And what's interesting is he's down in his count 1-2 and then works it full and begins fouling some pitches off to get something he can hammer. And it reminded me of that Connor Powers home run, or maybe even the Josh Hatcher home run in the Super when it goes well up on the batter's eye. It's one of the hardest hit balls I've seen in center field from a Mississippi State player. Now it's a 9-4 ball game. So even though you stretch Sierra a little bit and paid for it, you're able to overcome it. So now the lead is back out to 5 runs. So again, good offensive work here. Kazmar, despite hitting 2 home runs, comes up and tries to bunt, and it is a very easy and routine play. Again, we have an E6 here, and then we get out of it rather quickly. And so head to the bottom of 9 against State, looking to continue to expand. You can never have enough runs in the SEC. You never can. Hines works a full count, gets a walk. Chance flies out to center field, and Hines tags from first and makes it to second. You weren't expecting that, but he made it. And I think the effort that you're seeing from Hunter Hines these last few weeks is remarkable and worthy of discussion. Guys, we're up 5 here, and you got Hunter trying to take an extra back, and he's not real fleet of foot. That's not his game. And he's leading by example. He didn't get up and be all rah-rah about it. He just does it. And you know what's crazy about that is because of that heads-up play, we get another run out of it. He takes the bag on what should have just been a guy retreating back to first base. So Stevens walks, and during the at-bat, there's the wild pitch. That moves Hines around to third. And then Gad Sanders, good situational hitter, flies out to left. Hines tags and scores. Again, that run doesn't happen without Hines hustling to second. That's the reality of life. Powell and grounds out to second. But it's a 10-4 ball game. And then Carolina goes 1-2-3. We come back and tack on one more here in the eighth. It's Reed Stallman, a one-out solo home run to center field to make it 11-4. So a double and a home run. And then he makes an incredible play here in the bottom of nine. Absolutely nuts, man. They bring in Tippett, and that ball was tailing to the line. And then Stallman lays out and gets a fistful of grass, or faceful of grass, pardon me. I hope it wasn't fistful. Guys, it's a seven-run game. This is a guy that clearly wants to play. That's what he's telling Coach. Coach, I want to play. We had Comfort ground out, Cosmer grounds out. That's a ball game. 11-4. So State wins, and we're feeling a little bit better about life after this. It's even. You know, we wanted to sweep, but like, hey, we go into Sunday now with a chance to win. And, you know, again, just kind of looking at box score here, you know, who were your big hitters? Well, Reed Stallman goes 2-for-2. The solo home run, and of course, I don't know how that's right. Because the run scores on the double. Anyway, I think the numbers are wrong. Ace Reese goes 3-for-5 in the ball game. A couple of tanks. It's always nice. Noah Sullivan, 1-for-5. Hunter Hines, 1-for-3. Nolan Stevens, 2-for-2 in the game. Also had a couple walks. So on base 4 times in a ball game. Ahead of a guy like Gat Sanders, hitting nearly 400. Good stuff there. And, of course, Dylan Cup, his first collegiate home run. But, Evan Sierra I thought was good. And we stressed him a little bit. Probably, again, 2 times through the order, and then you got to go. But Hungate comes in and goes 4 2/3 of an inning, allows 1 base runner on a walk. No hits, no runs, 4 strikeouts. Excellent, excellent effort. So Bulldogs win the ball game, and now we get a chance to go for the series win on Sunday. And listen, I don't care how much you're upset about, you know, the last few years of baseball. You know, you and I both know, when the game comes on, you want Mississippi State to win. It may not be what you tell your friends, but you want the Bulldogs to win. And no matter, again, what your feelings are about Chris Simonis, when you turn that game on yesterday, you're like, man, I hope my boys win. And they did. And again, pretty well-pitched game for the most part. Hall gets a little single to open his thing up, and then that's it. Right? That's the ballgame for South Carolina. A leadoff single the other way off Carson Ligon, and that's the game for South Carolina. They didn't get another hit until the last play of the game. You get 2 hits in a game on the first pitch and the last pitch. When that happens, you are going to lose. We didn't know that at the time, but how remarkable is that? So after the single through the left side, Ligon gets a 1-2-3 inning, and then, we come up and get a 2-out single from Noah Sullivan and get him around, and then Hines grounds out. So not much going there. And then Ligon, 1-2-3 in the second. State comes up a double, a ground rule double from Gat Sanders on an 0-2 pitch with 2 down, and then we can't get him around. So again, State getting a little traffic on the bases, but not bunching anything together. And then Ligon again in the third, 1-2-3. State goes 1-2-3 in the third. In the fourth, they walk. We walk Jackson, and then we get Petrie to ground into a double play, and then Tapper back to the mound, and Ligon makes a great athletic play there to retire the side. So you're looking up here, man. It's like, guys, we're in the fourth inning, and Ligon is rolling, but we need to score, and score we did. Noah Sullivan homers to left, Hunter Hines in doubles to left center. Now a career best, ties a career best 12-game hitting streak for Hunter Hines. It dates back to his freshman year. Yeah, that's the only other time. Last year he had an 11-game hitting streak, and now so far he's got 12. So if he gets a hit against UAB, it'll be a career-long hitting streak for Hunter Hines. Bryce Chanson doubles to center, and Hines comes around to third. Stevens grounds out, run scores, and then Sanders singles, and Chance comes in to score. It's a 3-0 game. And they are on the ropes. Powell then singles to center field, and then Cup singles back up the middle. The run scores there. They bring in Becker for Stone. Stallman flies out, but it's an RBI sack fly. It's 5-0. Guys, this game is over. We didn't know it at the time, but this game is over. And what I love about this inning, instead of trying to do too much, we're just up there working counts, getting pitches we can handle, being aggressive early in counts when we get a fastball, but not hitting their pitch. Now, you want to start me with a changeup or a slider, that's cool. Okay, I'm going to take that because another fastball's coming at some point. And when we got it, we made them pay for it. 5-0 ball game. And then Liggett's back out there. What do you need after a scoring inning? You need a cleat inning. And when you get one, 1-2-3 for Liggett. And at this point, I'm starting to think, who is this guy? What's happening? Bottom of 5, and State again expands the lead. Sullivan singles to right. Hines strikes out, but then Chance doubles down the left field line, and Sullivan comes around to score from first. That's end of the highlights for the inning, but Stevens with a really good at-bat there ends up grounding out. And Gat Sanders lines out at third baseman, hit that ball on the nose, but just kind of right at him. All right, top of 6. Liggett back out again with a 6-0 lead. And kind of like the Sierra thing, it's like, listen, I know the series is almost over, and let's get some guys getting loose, but let's ride him. He gets caught for the strikeout look, and then he hits Kazmar with a pitch. And Kazmar ended up having to lead the game. 96 miles an hour to the leg. That's never going to feel good. Howell grounds out. Jackson strikes out swinging. And then you're like, this thing is really going to happen. That's how it felt. And I felt a lot of give up in South Carolina after this. Bottom of 6. State gets a 1-out single and a chance to kind of tack on here, but we don't. We actually strike out all 3 times for all 3 outs in the innings. And a couple lengthy at-bats there. The one to Reese, awkward swing there at the end. We just get fooled on a pitch. All right, Stone Simmons comes in the 7th. And if South Carolina didn't like Carson Liggett, Stone Simmons just gave him more of the same. 1-2-3 inning for the old man here. Bottom of 7. We go 1-2-3 here. And top of 8, Stone is just dealing here. 1-2-3 and spotting up a changeup low in the zone. And they're missing that thing by 1.5 feet. It was crazy. At bottom of 8, State goes 1-2-3. And then in the top of 9, Tippett strikes out. Hall strikes out. And then Jackson doubles into the gap, supposedly. We've got it scored as a double, but that's incorrect scoring. I guess technically it would be because he overshot the bag. I mean, I'm sorry. But good job here by Cup to stay on him, right? And a good job by everybody to hustle to get that ball in. So, again, South Carolina with a bit of an anomaly in baseball. 2 hits on the first pitch and the last pitch. And how many games do you win where a team gets a hit on the last play of the game? Yeah, a little food for thought there. And, looking again, outstanding effort from Carson Liggett. His best day as a Bulldog, without question. 6 innings pitched, 1 hits, 1 walk, 8 strikeouts, and they hit by pitch. And then Stone Simmons goes 3 innings of relief, earns the save, 1 hit, 5 Ks, no walks, faced 9 hitters. Think about that. Faced 9 hitters and got all 9. One of them, of course, that wild play at the end. So excellent pitching, and I don't know how many times we've gone through an SEC weekend with just 6 pitchers. Honest to goodness, I know we have, but considering the pieces on this team and how we've kind of had to piecemeal this thing together, it's pretty remarkable. Noah Sullivan, 3-for-4 with the 1 RBI and a couple runs scored. Hunter Hines, 1-for-4. Bryce Chance, 2-for-4. Gat Sanders, 2-for-4. Dylan Cup, 2-for-3. And again, you love to see that double-digit hits and to see it kind of up and down the order there. Pretty impressive, for sure. And Carson Liggett, of course, credited with the win. He's had a couple of bad outings, of course, that the game at LSU. And give LSU some credit, but I don't know that I would have tried to Carson Liggett back out there today on Sunday. This is my personal opinion. But he answered the call. Got the analytics to do it. But when he can throw 3 pitches for strikes, he can be effective. When he can't be, that fastball is kind of flat and turns into batting practice. So Bulldogs win the series very, very impressively on Sunday. And, again, I think it was the best game that we played. You allow 2 hits, and, again, you know the circumstances. They're bookends. But no errors. And you didn't get out there and walk a lot of people. Right, it's amazing what happens when you don't give people extra outs and free bases. incredibly, right? Again, you begin to break this thing down. Over the course of nine innings, they have four base runners, and one of those four gets tagged out for sliding over the bag. So your pitchers only had to deal with three base runners in an entire ball game. It's absolutely remarkable. It's crazy. And so you don't walk the ballpark, you don't boot the ball around, you win, even in the Southeastern Conference. But to get a shutout on a Sunday, it's a big deal. So congratulations to Mississippi State, and we'll look at the weekend that was and kind of look ahead to the weekend that is, or the week that is. So I guess we got to name our player of the weekend, and that's kind of a difficult decision, to be honest with you. But I think due to the timeliness of some hits, I've got a good idea of which way we're going to go here. The player of the weekend, sponsored by closewithblair.com. Blair is my friend, your friend, our collective friend, at 601-500-2344. Give him a call or text today. If you have needs in the mortgage industry, whether you're looking to buy a home or refinance your current home, maybe you want to take advantage of, maybe interest rates are beginning to drop a little bit. But Blair can keep you apprised of when the best time to make a move is. Blair's 24 years of experience and know-how could be a great benefit to you and your family. He can help the dream of home ownership come true, where maybe perhaps it has eluded you in the past. Visit him at closewithblair.com. So whether you're looking for your first home, your next home, or your retirement home, look no further than Blair Chandler. He is a bulldog through and through, a guy that rides a wave of emotion just like you do. His daughter went to prom over the weekend too, so he might be a little sensitive right now, but that may be a good time to jump aboard. Maybe he's feeling a little bit nostalgic. Blair is a great guy and can get you to the closing table when so many others can't. So we're going to go with Noah Sullivan is our player of the weekend. And again, there were a lot of candidates. When you think about the relief effort we got from, Chase Hungate and from Stone Simmons and the starting effort from Carson Ligon over the weekend. But Noah was a big part of both of our wins. Pretty good week, too. Last week, he reached base in all four games and scored a run in all four games last week. But the big game for him came on Sunday when State needed to close out a series. He goes 3-for-4, of course, the big fly there. Batting average now 355. How about that? Yeah. Getting it done. And Servin is a good midweek guy for us, too. I suspect he'll be our pitcher tomorrow. We'll see how things go. And excited about that, to say the least. But again, Noah Sullivan, your player of the weekend for Mississippi State. All right, time for today's top 10 list. As always, brought to you by Kalito Guitars. You can't have good music without good guitars. You need to visit them at Kalito Guitars. That's C-A-L-I-D-O, Kalito Guitars. They're based out of North Jackson, Texas, just south of Houston there. And what's interesting, this is a Mississippi State company. It's owned and operated by Bulldogs. And so not only are you helping yourself and helping the player in your life, you are helping a Mississippi State company. I think it is a great opportunity to not only pick up a quality instrument with great selection, man. Great selection. Incredible service. And their expertise. Visit them at Kalito Guitars or call 979-297-4733. And it's not just guitars. It's everything guitar related. Anything you need, gig bags, cases, guitar strings, all that cool stuff. And there's something cool about walking around with a guitar case. It's just, I don't know what it is. People dig it. But by being a listener of the Boneyard, we'll give you a promo code. It's BSR. And that gives you a 10% discount, gets you free shipping. And no sales tax unless you live in the state of Texas. In addition to that, a 5% donation to the Bulldog Initiative / Bulldog Excellence Fund for making a purchase. How cool is that? Use that promo code and you're helping yourself, helping a Mississippi State business, and helping Mississippi State athletics. We are so appreciative of Kalito Guitars for being a sponsor of our show and the many things they are doing for Mississippi State. All right, we got a request over the weekend. One of the young bucks came up to me at Duty Noble Field, by the name of Jacob. Jacob, appreciate you coming up saying hello. He said, Steve, I have learned a lot about grunge on the show. I love grunge, and I like it when you talk about the history of grunge. Now, grunge lasted about 15 minutes. Probably been given more credit than it actually deserves. And I loved grunge. I was obsessed with grunge. I was a Rolling Stone subscriber back then. One of my aspirations in life is I wanted to be a rock journalist and write for Rolling Stone back when they wrote about music. It's a different thing now. Everybody's an activist these days rather than just an educator, a person that presents information. Everybody's got their own spin on it, but that's a story for another day. So, Jacob, and I said, I disagree with you about Nirvana, but I'd like to know more about grunge. And so I thought, you know what, hey, in honor of the conversation, let's talk about some grunge pioneers. And it's interesting because it kind of existed in a little bit of a fishbowl for a while up there in Seattle. There wasn't an established music sound for Seattle. Yet they had some big bands out of the 70s. And then there was just undercurrent of a grassroots movement that kind of rose up from punk. And some of the bands that we're going to talk about today got their start in punk. And then there are some bands, of course, due to some creative tuning and things of that nature, some rhythm and things like that really changed. But grunge was not a marketable commodity for a long time. And then as bands began to evolve a little bit and write songs that had a little more of a catchy chorus, people love a hook, right? They want a great guitar hook and also the ability to sing along with a chorus. But some of these bands, it took them a while to kind of develop that. So here we go. Number 10, a band that just about every true grunge band will tell you was an influence on them was the U-Men. Now, they were a punk band. They were a little bit irreverent at times. We're going to go with the track 2x4 for them, 2x4 from the U-Men. Number 9, a band that I don't know that gets enough commercial acclaim, but got a ton of critical acclaim. And Matt Cameron, of course, future drummer for Soundgarden, was in multiple bands on our list today. But Tina Bell was considered to be the godmother of grunge. And sadly, she is deceased. She died at the age of 55 due to cirrhosis of the liver. And like Lane Staley, they didn't find her for a while, which makes it even an even sadder case. But, you know, her and her husband both were in the band, a band called Bam Bam, and we're going to go with the title track from their album, Free Fall from Space. And it is a little different. It's kind of an acquired taste, but you can hear some of the tuning and some of the riffing that goes along in their catalog that was kind of replicated by other bands. All right, number 8, a band you know, and they were a band too as Alice in Chains and Nirvana and Pearl Jam and Soundgarden began to make their ascension to the national spotlight. A lot of people reached out about Mudhoney. They're like, hey, Mudhoney was kind of the forerunners of this movement. They're not getting enough notoriety or credit for their work. We're going to go back to the beginning with them. And this album was re-released kind of in the height of the grunge era. But it had been around for a while. But we're going to go with Mudhoney's Touch Me, I'm Sick is your number 8 track today. Number 7, another band that it took a little while for them to kind of catch on. And then they had a hit that was on MTV, and everybody said, oh, this is the next great band from Seattle, not knowing that they had been around since 1987 and already put together a couple of full-length albums. And they benefited from the Seattle scene. And we're talking Screaming Trees. We're going to go back to Standing on the Edge, back to 87. You're like, but Steve, 87, I didn't know the grunge was around. It was. Matter of fact, 87 is also the year that Kurt Cobain began to form Nirvana. Maybe you didn't know that. So yeah, Screaming Trees already a couple albums out before Nirvana even had a rehearsal. All right, way back to the early 70s, or late 70s, early 80s, a band that a lot of grunge bands claim some allegiance to. It's a band called The Wipers. And they were very much a punk band, but they weren't like the Southern California punk bands. It was a little different. They were a little darker. They were a little more serious. A lot of those bands from California were punk bands, were just kind of silly. But the Wipers, great track called Return of the Rat. That's your number 6 track today. All right, number 5. Many people reference the Melvins when they talk about drop D tuning. That was kind of like synonymous with them. Everything was a little bit darker. Things they used a lower register. A lot of it also had to do with the vocal accompaniment, right? Like, so you wanted to be able to lay a bed or an array of sound that it made sense when you put the vocal that people weren't singing off key. And there wasn't a lot of people singing on key back then. But the Melvins, a couple years ago, played at Howlin' Mal's there in Jackson. A lot of people got to see them for the first time in the great state of Mississippi. But because I wanted to kind of exemplify the guitar sound of the Melvins, and when you hear it, it's going to sound so incredibly familiar, even if you don't know the track. It's a great song called Leech. Not Mike Leech, but just Leech. It goes back to their debut album. And I think, again, when you hear that, there's going to be this feeling and air of familiarity, even though if you're unfamiliar with the song. Another band that Matt Cameron was involved in, of course, he was the drum player in Bam Bam, and of course, eventually Soundgarden, but he was kind of a journeyman, kind of a yeoman, I guess you could say, but he was in a good band that I don't know that this generation has fully embraced, and it's a band called Skin Yard, and again, one of the forerunners of the MTV corporate push for grunge, and you go back to their lead single, it's a song called Gelatin Babies, I think was right. I think that's right. Let me check my math here. But I think that this is a band too. And again, because of the fact that Matt Cameron was involved, I don't know that Matt gets enough respect, to be honest with you. Because everybody thinks about Soundgarden and you automatically go right to Chris Cornell and, of course, Kim Thayil. But Matt Cameron was the guy that really kind of slowed things down for them. Yeah, Gelatin Babies. Yeah, Gelatin Babies is correct. I want to make sure I'm right. Cool track there called Reptile, too, on that album. Think you'll dig it. But again, Skin Yard, a band that maybe didn't get enough credit. Now, these final three bands were really kind of the forerunners for a lot. We're going to start with Green River. We talked about them. We did a top 10 list a while back about them. But Green River eventually, it was out of Green River was born Mother Love Bone and eventually Pearl Jam. We're going to go with the song New God for them to represent them. Number two, a band that never really broke out of the Pacific Northwest. And I think this is an important aspect too because many of you know Soundgarden, Alice in Chains, you know Nirvana obviously. Well, this band was the headliner for many of them. As they began to kind of get their start, Tad Dole's band, known Thomas Andrew Dole, was a drummer in a band called H Out, and then started putting his own thing together, and was one of, if not the first bands signed by Sub Pop Records. And so Tad was like expected to be this big thing. It just never really took off. And I think a lot of it's just the vocal stylings were maybe a little bit too punk. They were also using interesting tuning, and a lot of it is kind of eerily reminiscent of Black Sabbath's early days. And so, again, grunge was still kind of finding a sense of itself. The band was only around about 3 years. But we're going to go with a track called Behemoth for Tad. Yeah. Again, I think you're going to dig it. And then finally, number one. This band was actually formed in 1980 by Columbus, Mississippi native Andrew Wood. And for years, the malfunction experience was not known. People kind of knew who they were because of their interest in Pearl Jam, Mother Love Bone. And then Stone Gossard several years ago made it his pet project to get Andrew Wood's earlier stuff with Malfunction out to the record-buying public. And I think when you go and listen to this, and I've encouraged the bride to do so because we both love Mother Love Bone, but Malfunction was a little bit different. And Return to Olympus is the name of the album. It's dated 95, but that's not necessarily the truth. But the song that I wanted to go with, you know, probably the big hit on the album, is Until the Ocean, but it's more of a ballad. But Shotgun Wedding, I think you'll dig that one. And all of the like pre-production stuff is still exists. Like they're demoing this stuff, and you can still hear, you know, the sound guy. Hey guys, the tape is rolling. Oh, and then Andrew comes in, give me the bass line, you know. And so next thing you know, they're kind of off and running. But you're going to hear some lyrical content in the song Shotgun Wedding that you're familiar with if you know Mother Love Bone. And again, a lot of this stuff just kind of kept going along. But I would encourage you, go listen to that Return to Olympus from start to finish. And I think you're going to really dig that one. It's, again, there's so many things, some elements of grunge that really kind of stand out. And, of course, the love and joy of Andrew Wood. And he, before it was called grunge, they used to ask him to describe what kind of music do you play. He said, love rock, you know, because he was very much a free spirit. And anyway, I think you'll dig that one. But, you know, it's interesting, too. Again, Jacob, about the Nirvana thing, there's such a revisionist history about this. And some people don't like it because it hurts their feelings. But, you know, Nirvana's debut album was on Sub Pop. And people are like, hey, well, this is super cool. Let's go out and get a bumper sticker, a t-shirt. Sub Pop signed some of these bands in the early going. You know, Ultra Mega OK from Soundgarden was also on Sub Pop Records. And then Louder Than Love was recorded through A&M. And there was a bit of a bidding war for bands like Soundgarden. Not so much for Nirvana initially. But they released Bleach. And unbeknownst to many of you, over the course of 3 years, that album sold less than 40,000 copies. Yeah, and some people would say, well, they couldn't get it to them. No, there was no demand for the record. It wasn't until after Nevermind broke that Nirvana's Bleach became a bit of a hit. And it actually went from obscurity because of interest in the band. People wanted to buy the back catalog and not just what was on MTV. And now it's sold about 2 million copies. And it's pretty incredible to think about that in hindsight. But one of the questions that I have to ask for you is, you know, we think about corporate rock and things like that, and it's so funny, so many people in the grunge movement were part of the corporate machine, including Nirvana, but then had this public persona that they were not in favor of corporate magazines and corporate rock and things like that. But let me ask you, how does a band that was drawing less than 100 people a show and selling less than 10,000 records a year get that record deal, get that promotion, get in heavy rotation on MTV? That's a question you'll have to ask yourself. But again, I think sometimes, you know, again, we had this discussion earlier at my house about, you know, those bands from the 70s, number one, how they could really play, right? And much of the recording was done live. There wasn't a lot of punch-ins. They would do some fill-ins later, but by and large, most of the albums that were recorded in the 70s were recorded live. Not in front of a live crowd, but in the studio. So you didn't like do drums and guitars and bass line. That didn't come until much later. Now, nowadays, you can download Pro Tools and you too can be a rock superstar. But it was a different day and time. And so it's so interesting. Back in those days, in the 70s, we didn't have MTV. You know, we had the skating rink and we had terrestrial radio. We had American Bandstand. You know, so the avenues and venues to promote music were very small. And so only the records that record companies truly believed in got airplay. And so it's a much different dynamic. And then the 90s came. Of course, there were still some of those elements of the big corporate rock thing. And that's really what happened in music. Some people don't want to admit that, or perhaps they don't know it. But the music industry as a whole, the record-buying public, was kind of fading on the 80s hair band stuff. And it's the music company and the record company, they themselves are at fault for this, because basically, much like they did with Seattle, is they wanted to keep mining, you know, that North Hollywood sound. You know, it's like, hey, well, who's the next Motley Crue? Who's the next Poison? You know, we just did a tough top 10 list in honor of my friend Benny Bruce. And that's kind of what was happening, is it gotten really watered down. And so they needed something new. And so all of a sudden you have somewhat of a thriving music scene in Seattle. It's like, well, hey, let's go up there and cast our hooks in the water out there. And then everything, if you remember, those of us that lived through this, remember this, those of us that were sober, remember this, There's a reason you still talk about like the big four in grunge. And you put Stone Temple Pilots in there too, even though they were not truly a Seattle band. But they were really more contemporaries. But Alice in Chains, Soundgarden, Nirvana, Pearl Jam, and then Stone Temple Pilots is kind of lumped in with there too. But again, when this process began, bands like Nirvana and Pearl Jam and Soundgarden were already a thing. It was already a big thing. And people were like, well, hey, there may not, the water well may be a little bit shallow, but let's go up there anyway. And that's how you got everything, you, Julie Brown and Shauna Kantner, and everybody's on MTV, and Kennedy and all these people are like, hey, the next big band from Seattle is going to be this. And then you go out and you buy the album, and it was terrible. You know, and that's what happened, is that the reason grunge didn't last longer than it did is because of the fact there just wasn't enough substance to go around. And then the corporate music machine mined that thing and watered it down to a point that they had to create something else. So then they started coming up with, hey, this is the post-grunge movement. And so, hey, it's still grunge. You want to use that label that nobody in Seattle used. That, again, was a corporate creation. And so, like, hey, well, it's post-grunge. Post-grunge rock, you know. Let's keep it in there so people are like, hey, well, it still has some elements of grunge, but it's more radio-friendly. And that's really what happened. You know, it's true. Not to mention the fact, too, that the riff for Smells Like Teen Spirit is the exact riff and timing of More Than a Feeling from Boston. But maybe you're not ready to have that conversation. All right, next segment of the show brought to you by Campus Bookmart, a Starkville institution. We love Campus Bookmart. We have for a long time. And why do we love them? Because they have what we want. You can find anything that you need for the Mississippi State fan in your life right then and there. You can go by Campus Bookmart today. You can pick up some great apparel. You can also have the opportunity to kind of run through there and find some gift ideas that are a little more timeless. Maybe it's, you know, you've got that little, you know, I guess let's call it the little nook, cranny, whatever it is, and you need the special little bulldog emblem or statue for there. It's available at Campus Bookmart. Also, those diploma frames with graduation coming up here in a few weeks. You can buy a timeless gift for the bulldog in your life. I would encourage you to do so. Go by and see their smiling faces the next time you're in town. If you can't make it to town, let me encourage you to visit them on the World Wide Web at campusbookmart.net. And by being a loyal Boneyard listener, we'll give you a phrase that pays. That is BSR, which stands for Beautiful Steve Robertson. That gets you free shipping on all orders over $75. Any order less than 75 bones, absolutely incomplete. All right, let's take a quick look back at the weekend it was in the Southeastern Conference. Ole Miss, interesting with Ole Miss. Like, people kind of keep waiting for them to fall, and people are like, well, you know, the schedule hadn't been the most difficult. And that's true. It is true. But they keep winning, right? And that's an important aspect of this. You know, we spoke on Friday's show about LSU, the big win over Oklahoma on Thursday to open the weekend, and LSU sweeps the series. And that's one of the things that we have talked about on this show. I just don't think Oklahoma's pitching is going to hold up. They just don't have enough depth pitching-wise. And, again, that's a series that we should have taken. We all know it. We all believe it. But you know, give LSU some credit there. But getting on this Ole Miss Kentucky thing, you know, Kentucky gets the Friday game 5-4, and you know, there's a lot of weather up there, so they had to move some things around. But man, you know, Ole Miss 13 hits in that ball game and just 4 runs, and so they left some things out there. But Luke Hill 3-for-5 with 3 RBI and a home run in the ball game, and Kentucky wins that game in relief, winning in the 10th inning. Of course, that was the game 2 of the doubleheader. Luke Hill also a hero in the first game, even though they lose the second one. They win the first game 3-1. And, again, that game goes to the ninth. I mean, very, very emotional ball game. So Ole Miss takes the series at Kentucky 2-1. Rather interesting. Vanderbilt, a team that, you know, I'm not crazy about, and I've said that, but, you know, pretty good weekend for them. They get game 1 against Florida, 6-0. Alabama and Auburn, we talked about what a wild series that thing could prove to be. And it was. It was an absolutely crazy series. Auburn mercy rules Alabama 10-0. Now, we're going to get to try out Alabama for size this weekend, but I'm going to tell you, I don't think they're nearly as good as some people have tried to make them out to be. They have two hits in that ball game. The game, guys, it was a 6-0 game in the second inning, and by the time you get to the 7-inning stretch, the game is over. 15 hits in the game for Auburn, and just two, again, for Alabama as they lose 10-0. Tennessee makes quick work of A&M on Friday. They mercy roll them, 10-0, in a no-hit appearance. Pretty nuts there. Liam Dahl goes 5-1 on the year, 6 innings pitched, no runs, 8 Ks. And so all of a sudden, if you're A&M, you're like, man, the season's over, guys. We're 14-15, we're 1-9. We got Tennessee, two more games at the top team in the country. Man, this thing is done. It's done. Turns out it wasn't. All right, getting to our Friday scores. We mentioned LSU won on Thursday. They went again on Friday, 10-2. Put on 4 runs there in the ninth. And again, 15 hits. This LSU offense just doesn't seem to stop. They're very relentless. And again, I think, you know, we're going to regret the fact that we didn't at least get a game from them. We already do. Texas wins game one against Georgia 5-1. Limited the Georgia Bulldogs to just 3 hits. And again, I think, you know, Jarrett Spencer goes 7 2/3 of an inning. And he's a guy that we had a good experience against and got him out of the ballgame. But again, the Georgia thing on the road, it's just one of those things I think you're going to have to watch very closely this year. And nothing else to say. Vanderbilt wins game two in their series against Florida by the score of 3-2. Vanderbilt with 1 in the ninth there. Really good ball game, for sure. But not a ton of offense. The teams combined for just 14 hits. But, I mean, it's like a 1-0 game, a 2-0 game for Vanderbilt. Florida gets one back in the fifth, ties it in the seventh, and then Vandy with the one run. The Vandy offense is going to be the difference between a good season and an average season for them. Alabama fights back in game two of their series at Auburn and takes 2 runs in a ninth. Again, you know, Auburn, you know, just outs away from winning a series here. And it's 5-4 in the ninth, and you can't close it out. And you give up 2 runs in the ninth and ultimately lose 6-5. Derek Fabian with 3 hits for Auburn in a losing effort. Justin LeBron, 3-for-5, 3 RBI with a home run. And Austin Morris wins the game in relief. A&M, surprising the world here. Game two of their series with a 9-3 win. And you look up and you're like, hey, Justin Lampkin, he was the guy that pitched in that the Hunter Hines game last year. You know, when Morris Hodges was given the left-hander about 6 to 8 inches off the plate, it's tough. Well, he ups his record to 2-3. I guess Morris Hodges wasn't calling the game. But A&M wins 9-3 and kind of, you know, swung the bats pretty well. 11 hits, a couple of errors for both teams. We think it only happens to us. It doesn't. But give A&M a lot of credit. You know, guys, you look up here, it's a 3-2 ball game in the fifth, and then A&M continues to kind of tack on and tack on and tack on, and getting Sorrell back is huge for them. But 1 in the seventh, 3 in the eighth, and ultimately win the game 9-3. Texas takes a series 7-4, and had to come from behind to do it. Georgia jumps out to a 4-0 lead, and then Texas gets 2 back in the fifth and then takes the lead there in the seventh and then coast over the final 2 innings to win 7-4. Very efficient offensively, just 6 hits in the ballgame for them, but they score 7 runs. And you know, Max Grubbs, in relief, has proven to be really good for them. He's got 3-0. All right, we talked about Georgia being on fire. Texas threw some water on it, for sure. LSU completes a sweep of Oklahoma in Norman, Oklahoma. Tight ball game. Chase Shores, you know, took the comebacker to the eye last week against State. Told you guys then I didn't expect it to be very serious or keep him out. Turns out it wasn't at all. He gets the win, going 5 innings pitched, 4 Ks, no runs for him. No earned runs, pardon me. But it's a 3-1 ball game late. And then in the ninth inning, Oklahoma nearly comes back and forces an extra or walks this thing off, but instead LSU closes the door and wins 3-2. So a road sweep for the Tigers, who are now 30-3 and 10-2 in the conference. And then Ole Miss, kind of a wild game here. It ends up going 12. And there was some woofing after the game. And there was a lot of this hold me back type stuff. I mean, just go get on the bus and go home, right? Ole Miss, impressive win on the road at Kentucky to take 2-3. You know how tough those Mingione clubs are, especially in Lexington. And give the Rebels some credit. They're 24-7, 8-4 in the conference. And they take Kentucky. And that's a tough place to go play. Ask Tennessee. It's a tough place to play. Arkansas, 21-3 winners over Missouri in 7 innings. Zach Root goes 5-1. 5 innings pitching the ball game. Cam Coziel, the first baseman, is a guy that's been there for a little bit while, but big ball game for him, 4-5. And then, guys, probably the most surprising result of the weekend. Texas A&M, 17, Tennessee, 6. The Aggies go to Knoxville and leave winners. And this was no fluke. 3 runs in the first. 1 in the third to make it a 4-2 game, and then from there, A&M just laid waste to this Volunteer pitching staff. 6 in the fourth, 4 in the fifth, 3 in the eighth, 17-6, 16 hits, and again, probably the last thing you expected, except maybe Missouri beating Arkansas, which didn't happen. Alabama and Auburn. Auburn takes the series with a 7-5 win, a dozen hits in the ballgame. Huge, huge series win. And if you remember on this show, we talked about, I thought Auburn could be a team that nobody's talking about that could make some racket. And they are. And so, great scenario for them. Vanderbilt, 11-3 winners. We're on our Sunday games now. Vanderbilt, 11-3 winners over Florida. And this Florida team is absolutely decimated with injuries. Florida now 20-14 overall and 1-11 in the Southeastern Conference. Vanderbilt now 7-5. And again, I really wish we were playing Vanderbilt. They got some good pitching, but offensively they have had some real challenges. And they kind of take advantage of the fact that Florida's down a couple of big arms. Jonathan Bastine, a guy that I think has been underappreciated in Nashville, goes 4-4 in the ballgame. Of course, your Bulldogs take the series. And then Texas completes a sweep of Georgia. Did you have that on your bingo card? I thought Texas would take it. I didn't think they'd sweep. It takes 10 innings, but Texas walks it off. Yeah, walks it off to sweep Georgia. Pretty interesting type deal, man. I mean, it truly is. And people wondered how Texas was going to handle this, but Galvan with the walk-off. How would Texas handle the adjustment to the SEC? Well, having Jim Schlossnagel certainly helps. Arkansas, Missouri, and again, we talk about how bad Missouri is. I don't know that you can fully appreciate it, honest to goodness. And I think yesterday's a good example. This Arkansas offense is streaky. There's not a lot of stars. The Aloy brothers are good, but like, there's not a guy you look at and say, oh, man, this kid, we got to make sure we can't let this guy beat us. They're just kind of solid up and down the order. So they mercy rule Missouri 14-4-7. And have 16 hits. And Arkansas made a couple of errors in the ballgame. And then in game two, Arkansas beats Missouri 16-2. So you play two games and you mercy rule them, even though it's going to be 2-7s, right? But you still beat them by 10-plus runs. It's nuts, man. It's like, hey, we're going to help you guys out. We're only going to play 7. But we're still going to beat you to death. And that's exactly what happened. So looking back at your series winners over the weekend, and there's a reason we play the games. LSU goes to Norman and sweeps. Ole Miss goes to Kentucky and takes the series. Vandy goes to Florida and sweeps. South Carolina comes to Mississippi State and loses. Alabama goes to Auburn and loses 2 out of 3. A&M goes to Knoxville and wins. Georgia goes to Texas and gets swept. Missouri to Arkansas. And they get swept. So looking at the SEC standings, Arkansas and Texas right now are tied atop the league at 11-1 records. And Arkansas has won 7 games in a row. Just a game back is LSU, who has won 8 straight. And again, I still feel like we should have won that series. I know maybe I'm a homer, but I think you guys feel the same way. You lose 2-1 in a ball game where you give up 2 solo home runs. You got to find a way to win that game. Tennessee, after losing 2 to A&M, drops to 9-3. So 2 games out of first place. And then there's Georgia and Ole Miss right there at 8-4. Of course, Georgia getting swept has kind of come back to reality. Not a lot of woofing about Georgia today. And again, when they go on the road, it's going to be something to watch. Alabama and Vanderbilt right there at 7-5. Vandy's won 4 in a row. And, of course, it helps when you go play a team that's decimated by injuries. Auburn now up to 6-6 after the weekend. Kentucky and Oklahoma 5-7. And then just behind them is Mississippi State and Texas A&M at 3-9. Beneath us is South Carolina at 2-10. Florida at 1-11, and Missouri 0-12. So here's the thing, too, and I've seen some people out there like, well, it could be worse. Guys, we're Mississippi State. We are Mississippi State. We are going to judge ourselves based on our own tradition and our own history and our own expectations, and we don't need other teams to be poorly to make us feel better about the fact that we have not played as well as we should have, okay? I take no glory in the fact that, well, Florida's 1-11. Yeah, other than the fact that we play them in a couple weeks. And we got to find a way to win that. We could use the sweep. We've got to win that series. And there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. And those are things you start thinking about. The bottom two teams in the league, Florida and Missouri, we play them both. You play them both, and you start thinking about the math, right? You start thinking about, okay, how many games do we need to get there, Steve? What do we need to do? You know, well, that's 5 or 6 right there you got to get. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. You get those 5 or 6, and, of course, the Missouri series happens at the end of the year. But, yeah, there's a lot riding on those two series. But, again, you start picking at the other things. The main thing we can do, we have to avoid getting swept at all costs. I don't care what we have to do. We absolutely cannot get swept, and we got to win as many weekends as we can. And it's so easy to get caught up in it. We're like, well, hey, what's next? What's next? Well, we're going to talk about that in the next segment of the show. That segment of the show is brought to you by the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. Stark Vegas Clubhouse, the best place to stay in the Golden Triangle. No ifs, ands, or buts about that. If you're bringing a large group to town, why would you want to stay anywhere else? Just 5 minutes away from the Mississippi State campus, you can go buy some groceries and cook there. You may want to get out and enjoy your favorite restaurants the first night you're here. But how nice is it, you know, for mom or dad to fire up the grill or the kitchen and be able to prepare food for the people they love the most? Maybe it's a ball game weekend retreat. Maybe it's a work event. There's no reason to look any further than the use of that full-service kitchen, the wet bar, the back porch area, the fire pit area, 6 bedrooms, 2 soon-to-be 3 baths. You'll be extremely excited about the experience. Plenty of parking out there, a lot of peace and quiet. Out past the Highlands, very easy to get to. Now, Google the Stark Vegas Clubhouse, and when you do, their Facebook page pops up. You can kind of peruse through all of the amenities available to you there. You'll be glad you did. And you need to be the linchpin in your friend or family group, and you make the plans. You say, hey, here's the availability. What weekend can you make it? We're going to book a trip. And we're going to go have a great time in Starkville, whether it's a ballgame weekend or not. So when you Google, you're going to see some booking options come up, Airbnb, VRBO. But if you want to save some money, book through the Evolve website. Evolve website in promo code BSR10. That's Beautiful Steve Robertson, the number 10, BSR10, gets you 10% off your stay. We have stayed there. We love it. We plan to be back at some point next year. It's just so nice to have everybody under one roof. That's the fun thing about it, right? You enjoy your family. Let's get a family-friendly, you know, location and get everybody together where everybody can kind of spread out and have a good time. Again, the Stark Vegas Clubhouse, the best place to stay in the Golden Triangle. All right. I am a person that tries not to get too far ahead of ourselves, right? But here is what we have in front of us. We're going to play UAB tomorrow night. I'll speak to Casey Dunn this afternoon. Again, you can look for that over at jeanspage.com. You'll be glad you did. You know, have a full exclusive interview with Coach. But UAB having a pretty good season, you know, and not sure of pitching matchups yet. We'll put that out there once we have them. We'll do a pitching preview tomorrow. A lot of people have enjoyed those. But Blazers having a good year. And if you know Casey Dunn, you know that Casey Dunn's a very competitive guy. Blazers are currently 18-14 You don't see that a lot from a lot of mid-major teams at their level, but 18-14. So let's kind of run through here, kind of see what they've done. They're 10-7 at home. But they open up the year in the Swig and Swan College Classic. They lose to Maryland, beat Mercyhurst, as they should, beat Towson, and then the Ball State game gets canceled. They come home, they beat Alabama A&M. They get South Alabama, too, 8-0. And you know what a good program they've been. But they ultimately sweep that series, 5-3, 9-7, your two finals. They go to Troy and lose at Troy, 7-4 in a midweek game. North Alabama comes in. You take all three there. And, again, you expect that. Like, some of the scheduling is smart on the behalf of Coach Dunn. You got to win some games. Well, they do. They play Auburn at Regents Field in Birmingham. Yeah, you know the place. And they win that game 6-5. And you know how well Auburn's playing here as of late? That's a significant win. They go to the First Pitch Invitational in Greenville, South Carolina. They lose to Michigan State. They beat Winthrop and beat Cornell. And that Cornell game was a wild one. It went down to the final swing, 13-12. And then they beat Michigan State in the finale of that series. They go to Alabama, or excuse me, they play Alabama at Regents Field and lose to them in a midweek game and then get Middle Tennessee. And they go on the road to Murfreesboro. They win the middle game but lose the series 2-1. They then host Troy at Rickwood Field there in Birmingham and get absolutely shelled in that ball game, 14-2. They host South Florida Conference Series, and they lose 2 out of 3. They win the opener 3-1, and then the other two games, pitching kind of failed them a little bit. They get beat 12-4 and 9-7. And that's where that non-conference schedule can kind of hurt you a little bit, too. You want to be ready for conference play, but maybe scheduling that light is not necessarily a great thing. They host Jacksonville State back on March 25th, lose that game 4-1. And then it's Wichita State. They lose the first two. The first one, they get absolutely shelled 11-1. They battle back to win the Sunday game 11-9, but drop the series 2-1. They get Auburn again at Auburn back on April Fool's Day, 4-2. And you would think Auburn should be able to hit midweek pitching, but they weren't that night. And so, that maybe prepares us a little bit, too, for a very competitive game. Over the weekend, they go to Texas San Antonio. Excuse me, they host Texas San Antonio. They lose the first two. And then salvage game three with a 13-6 win. But they got shelled on Friday 14-4. And I'm eager to talk to Coach Dunn just to kind of figure out, you know, kind of what's this pitching situation look like? You know, that's an interesting aspect of it. But Todd Clay is the leading hitter on the team. He's made 32 starts this year. Leads them with a .364 average. Also got three tanks and 33 RBI. And listen, we know we're going to get their best shot, and we're going to have to go out there and be prepared for them. And a guy that's originally from Auburn, Alabama, by way of Pensacola State Community College. So you know that Auburn game probably meant an awful lot to him, both of them. Logan Braunschweig, we played him last year. He's got 5 home runs, which is second on the team behind Camden Hayslip. But as a team, they're hitting just .253. You know, we talk about the headliners, but there's not a lot of length in this lineup. So if you can navigate through the top half, you ought to be able to put up some 1-2-3 innings. As a team, they have hit just 20 home runs. So not a ton of power there. And, you know, you kind of flip over here in the conference play and see how they're playing against their contemporaries. 11 home runs, so a little more of a power surge there. And Hayslip with 4. In conference play, pitching again has been a bit of an issue for them, but an 8.37 ERA for the team. Braxton Shelton is a guy that has pitched kind of sporadically in relief for them, has a 1.35 ERA in very, very limited appearances, and, you know, maybe we see him this week. I don't know. You know, maybe Coach Dunn will tell us, but he has been a midweek pitcher for them for a while. But in conference play, he is pitched on weekends against Wichita State and threw 4 innings against Texas San Antonio over the weekend. So if we do see him, it's probably going to be in an opener type role. But it's interesting when you begin to look at the pitching dynamics of this team. There's just a bunch of these guys that have done some good things for them, and then there's some other guys that just have not. Like, you look at some of the numbers here, the earned run average obviously just kind of jumps out for you, but try to make sure I'm looking at the right thing here. But team ERA is 5.63. That was in conference play I was looking at. Yeah, conference ERA for them not been nearly as good, 8.37. But looking at overall pitching, 5.63 ERA as a team in all of the games combined. But, you know, Chase Ingram, Colin Daniel, Cole Cheatham, a name that we know, you know, a guy that we think a lot of. And left the program and get an opportunity to, you know, to pitch regularly over there. And that's what he and his family want. We wish him the best. But, yeah, 8 starts for him. 3-4 record for Cole with a 6.58 ERA. And obviously primarily working on the weekends. But think a lot of that young man and his family. And he pitched over the weekend against Texas San Antonio. So I don't think we see him. But all that understood, you know, it's probably going to be a Johnny Holstaff type day. You know, Braxton Shelton is a guy that has 6 starts under his belt. Could be like their regular Tuesday guy, but we'll see. But he's pitched them on the weekend. So, again, eager to see what that looks like. But this is a team that their record has been good, but I think some of that is the product of scheduling. And that's not to be disrespectful. I think as a coach, you want to get some early confidence for your team and give them the opportunity, of course, to win some ball games and to feel pretty good about life. But, you know, again, you look at the pitching numbers and you begin to think about this. You know, 236 strikeouts against 128 walks. A 2-to-1 strikeout-to-walk ratio is not a winning formula. 306 hits allowed and 273 innings pitched. So well over a hit per inning. And you're giving up 190 runs. Most of them are earned. So that'll be interesting. And they've allowed 38 home runs. So nearly double what they've generated. And extra base hits has been a real problem for them. 105 extra base hits allowed and 306 hits. And so, yeah, we got to go over there and play to our potential. But, yeah, we absolutely should win this game. I think everybody sees that for what it is. We can ill afford to drop any more midweek games. And this may be among the most difficult ones that we have left. I think probably everybody would agree in that respect. But, you know, going on the road to play a regional team that kind of sees this as a recruiting opportunity. Also, I'd like to tell you, too, that lawn chairs are encouraged and accepted at Young Memorial Stadium. You can sit along the first baseline. It's not anything we're not used to. But limited seating ability there at the park. And so we'd expect a huge crowd. So you Bulldogs probably need to consider bringing the lawn chair. And you may be more comfortable out there. You should. Now we'll talk more about Alabama as we get into the weekend. We'll do the full preview on Friday. But that's a team that I think you got to watch a little bit. And I'm not going to say that they're a fraud. I'm not saying that. But, again, I think this is a team early on that a lot of people thought much higher of because, you know, there were some wins early on. You know, they kind of breezed through the non-conference. They're 27-6 overall, but 7-5 in conference. And those are the things you kind of begin to ask yourself. I mean, you played Bradley, you know, a weekend series. They had a kind of – the Jacksonville Classic was good because you had the big win over NC State. But outside of that, not a lot to speak of. North Dakota State is a weekend opponent. You know, that's not great, you know. Tip of the cap on the Troy win. But then you go to A&M and everybody's like, well, you know, how impressive is this? And A&M was absolutely drowning in despair. And you get the one game against Tennessee on Friday, and then the other two kind of get away from you a little bit. And then you get a couple against Oklahoma, and I think we all feel the same way about Oklahoma. I think they're good. I don't think they're great. And then all of a sudden, you know, they nearly lose to Samford, and then they nearly get swept by Auburn. It took two runs in a ninth to prevent getting swept on the road at Auburn. And so I think this is a team that we can be had, but we'll get deeper into that as we get into the weekend. Hope you guys enjoy having the earlier show on Monday. And come float with us at True West Floats by Starkville. You'll be glad you did. Matter of fact, we had some football staffers over the weekend. They're like, dude, this is amazing. We'll be back. You should be here too. It's not as simple as you may think. But it's also not as complicated as you may think. It's a great experience just to be able to float, have some serenity, some peace. If you're a person that suffers with chronic pain or anxiety, or you just need a break from everyday life, we may be able to help you. 662-268-7601. And come join us over at jeanspage.com. Still running a promotion these days. A lot of response to that, too. And we welcome all of you guys. We love you all. Still 50% off the annual subscription rate. Limited time for that, too. That's about to run out. And we had the option to opt out some time ago, but I thought we're doing so well with it. Let's just kind of keep rolling. And go to dutynoblebook.com, and you can get all of my sports titles. That's Flim Flam, Alpha Dog, Stark Villains, Dog Pile, and The Dude, in addition to When the Bottom Falls. You can get signed copies through there. And we'll have something to announce here pretty soon. And we just appreciate so much of your support and appreciate everybody coming up and saying hello. This is a big week for Bulldog Baseball. We need to do no worse than 3-1. And certainly need to win that weekend series. And we'd love to go 4-0. If we went 4-0 this week, I think a lot of people would be like, okay. Right? We just want Mississippi State to win. And we want what's best for Mississippi State long-term, too. So all that has to factor in. But we won a series over the weekend, so we're going to celebrate that and get ready to go play UAB and hopefully win that ball game and head to Tuscaloosa with a full head of steam. Until next time, let's all live our lives in a way we make more friends than enemies and people can see a difference in the way we live.
Did you know Microsoft has officially ended support for Windows 10? Upgrade to Windows 11 with an LG Graham laptop. Voted PC Mag's Reader's Choice Top Laptop Brand for 2025. Thin and ultra lightweight, the LG Graham keeps you productive anywhere. And Windows 11 gives you access to free security updates and ongoing feature upgrades. Visit lgusa.com/iHeart for great seasonal savings on LG Graham laptops with Windows 11. PC Mag Reader's Choice used with permission. All rights reserved.